We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Haw, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Banks it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Stop it! Did not do him like that!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh my goodness! Did you not get the memo?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. KC Johnson joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Morning, KC.
Morning, KC.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
This is the first, the number four pick out of Florida State since Dave Cowens. I saw the Tallahassee Democrat contacted Dave Cowens, who said that this kid's going to love playing in Chicago. He said 50 years is a long time between number four overall selections. And I thought to myself, if this kid can be an eight-time all-star and win a couple titles, I think they made a good pick. What do you think, Casey?
Yeah, how about that? That's a great stat. I think there's some Florida State history, but to me it's more recent history. I think it speaks to – Leonard Hamilton quietly is becoming one of those guys who just kind of has a pro style program and turns out, pros. They Devin Vassell go in the first round last night as well. And, I had the opportunity to speak with Leonard last night, and, he just talked about the way their style of play and how he feels that prepares players for the NBA. Not only with their offensive style and kind of an NBA set, a spread set, but also just the depth that they use and earning minutes and things like that. He said he really prepares guys for how difficult the NBA can be. So we'll see how it plays out. But, I know the Bulls certainly are excited. I'm sure you'll hear it in Arturis' voice at 8 o'clock.
Nice job getting a hold of Leonard Hamilton. He gave you the quote of the night, I thought, KC, when you asked him about why Patrick Williams didn't start games. Says no, but he finished them. And I think that's important to remember. This is a kid who was in there when it mattered for Florida State. And could you address the whole idea of how he fits into the modern NBA, the way that AK sort of described when he met the media last night? I think a lot of people are confusing positionless basketball with a directionless, plan for the Bulls, and I don't think that's fair necessarily. How would you describe the way Patrick Williams fits on this roster?
Well, I mean, you've heard it really since Arturis first took the job. I mean, he has pointed to really the style of play that the Nuggets employ, which is just read and react offense, high basketball IQ, guys moving without the ball, good passing team. And you're talking about a physical specimen who's obviously very strong and long, with big hands and long arms at 6'8", but also, as Arturis kept telling us, played some point guard in high school in the Charlotte area. So obviously has ball handling skills. So the Bulls view him as somebody that offensively, Arturis really wouldn't even name his position. He said he'll determine what his position is. I mean, he can play a lot of different positions. And then defensively, with his athleticism, his length, his IQ, his foot speed, his wingspan. The Bulls really believe he can guard all five positions. Obviously, that's very optimistic and excitement. Maybe he can, Leonard Hamilton seemed to suggest that he could too. He said that, you know, this is a guy you can switch on to smaller players, but also be physical in the post. We'll see how that plays out. But at minimum, particularly with how, you know, small teams, you know, go these days in the NBA, he's going to be able to guard four positions. So to me, it just fits with the overall philosophy that Arturis has laid out since he took the job. And that's just filling the roster with athletic two-way players who have a high basketball IQ and like to move with and without the ball. And I think you'll see that out of Patrick once he gets to Chicago.
There were a crazy number of kind of rumors, trade rumors floating around the Bulls that were going to move up, they were going to move down, they were going to trade half the roster. They didn't do anything. Did that surprise you? Now you got free agency. What can they do?
It didn't surprise me because I had heard late last week and then started going a little bit stronger with it earlier this week that Patrick Williams was their guy. So once they realized that the board was going to – it really depended on which – if those top three teams were able to trade out, because it was clear that Minnesota was willing to trade out really up until right before the draft. And Golden State, I mean, that was obvious. They, you know, were going to take Wiseman, but their number one priority was to trade out and try to get a veteran. So if those three teams stayed in at 1-3, and everyone knew it was going to be some combination of Edwards, Wiseman, Ball at those top three, there it was pretty certain that they were going to stand pat, because you know, it was earlier this week. I mean, there are other teams saying, you know, the Bulls are taking Patrick Williams, at least people I was talking to. So that's why I was writing it as strongly as I did. But what I would say to what you just said, Mully, is I wouldn't get complacent here. I wouldn't say just, okay, the Bulls got their guy, Patrick Williams, that's it. I'm not saying something's going to happen still this offseason, but I get the sense that Arturis, you know, if you just listen to the way he describes he wants to play, the Bulls roster ain't it. So they don't have a lot of two-way players that you know, move well and pass well. They're not a very good passing team. So I get the sense this guy is going to keep overhauling the roster. When that happens or how that happens, I obviously can't say now. But I would strongly caution against thinking, okay, the Bulls are set, you know, long term. I think within a year, maybe two, this roster is going to be completely overhauled. And then real quickly, you know, what can they still do? I mean, you just got to do the math. I mean, Williams will be a guaranteed contract. They're hopeful they're going to retain Denzel Valentine through restricted free agency. And so they're up to 14 contracts. Now, you can carry more than 15 contracts in the offseason, but at the end of the, you know, once training camp starts, and this is a really compressed offseason, you've got to be down to – I'm sorry, once the regular season starts, you've got to be down to 15 guaranteed deals. So they're looking at maybe one guy in free agency, maybe two if they decide to swallow, you know, Luke Kornet or Cristiano Felicio's guaranteed money. But, you know, with the second-round pick being a draft and stash, it's obvious that Arturis recognizes that the roster spots are at a premium too.
Casey, I'm glad you said that, because the more that Arturis talked last night about how Patrick Williams fits into the modern NBA, the less I was convinced that his roster actually fits what he's looking for.
Exactly.
Because the more he described the versatility, the less he sounded like he, you know, he was talking about his own team, because he's got a lot of guys that don't necessarily fit that profile. You mentioned the draft and stash second round pick. They also added an undrafted free agent, Devon Dotson, who lived in Chicago until he was in sixth grade. Then he moved to North Carolina. He played at Kansas. Does he have a shot to make this roster? Is he a developmental guy? Does it even matter? Some of the interesting details about his background.
Well, I just was reading an article before I came out with you guys, from Bill, where Bill Self kind of caught himself and said, I guess initially he said that he signed a two-way contract with the Bulls, but then corrected himself. And Arturis wouldn't go into details on it. So, I mean, does he have a chance? Yeah. I mean, he plays point guard, which to me still seems like a little bit of a position of need, because I think they view Kobe as more of an off-the-ball guy. But if he's a two-way guy, you know, they're probably targeting somebody else in free agency. And, you know, like I said, I think they will – use that last guaranteed deal to add somebody in free agency, whether that's a point guard or a shooter or some combination thereof. We'll see. But, you know, the point you raised, David, also to me gets a little bit into Denzel Valentine, which, you know, I would cross my sphere was a little bit of surprise or shock that the Bulls tendered him a qualified offer to make him a restricted free agent with the hopes of maintaining him. But say what you want about Denzel Valentine. He is the type of player we've been describing. He moves well about the ball. He's probably the best passer on the team. He's obviously a shooter, and he's got a high basketball IQ. And you may not say he's a lockdown individual defender, but he's a solid team defender. So he absolutely is one of those you know, two-way players with a high basketball IQ who values movement, passing, and can shoot it. And so he absolutely fits with the philosophy that Arturis has laid out. And Chris Dunn, who's elite at one side of the ball, but really, you know, almost unplayable at times at the other side of the ball, does not. And you know, that decision really didn't surprise me at all. And it really, really surprised at least the fan base that kind of came across my sphere.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned him because I think that there's a very interesting kind of dynamic at play in drafting the youngest American base player in the draft versus looking at Chris Dunn and his career. I mean, Chris Dunn was 22 when he was drafted. I think he was the oldest pick in the first five, oldest player in the first five picks in about 5 or 6 years when Minnesota took him. And then he comes to the Bulls. It's, you know, you are kind of established as who you are by the time you're at that age. You're on a trajectory. And NBA teams really like to get guys that are younger because if you enter the NBA at age 19, I believe the statistic is by the time you're 25, you will have improved by 6 points a game if you look at the average of these players. That's according to the data research. And if that's accurate, then you're talking about a guy now who is Chris Dunn's 26 now. By the time this guy is 26, he's going to be a significantly different, better, you know, Casey, he might be a better player in the 8 months since he's played. Who knows?
Right. And it also ties into something we haven't really brought up yet. You know, we're talking about style of play, but, you know, the other theme that Arturis and Mark Eversley have hammered since their hires is player development. And they're not just talking the talk there. They obviously walk the walk with the release of the coaching staff with, you know, four additional hires to the player development staff. So, you know, I know that they like the physical tools that Patrick Williams offers, but I also know that they recognize this is a player development opportunity. And really, a lot of people on the roster fall under that umbrella. What you kept hearing from these guys is, hey, this roster underachieved. This roster can be better. There's more talent in this roster than a 22-win team. So that's their job to obviously maximize the talent they have as they work to continue reshaping the roster to the image of the style that they want to play.
Don't know if you know this or not, KC, but were there other teams maybe who thought as highly of Patrick Williams as the Bulls? And I asked that because we talked earlier about the possibility, could they have moved down and still gotten their guy?
Nah, well, I know that the Detroit liked I know several teams liked him. I think Detroit was the most aggressive, but I don't – once those first three players went off the board, once those first three teams stayed in place, the desire to trade up was limited because everyone knew that the Bulls were going to take Patrick Williams. And again, there was no doubt that some combination of Edwards, Wiseman, and Ball were going to be those first three picks. So if Detroit got him, it would have been a trade with the Bulls, I believe. And the Bulls weren't interested because once, you know, they knew that he was going to be there at four, that's who they wanted. So, I know that the Bulls went through the process and there were other players, you know, that they debated on their board. I think the biggest, I found out pretty late last night, I don't even know if I've written this yet, so, you know, minor nugget here for you guys. I think Killian Hayes was a little bit in play, which surprised me because I thought it would be Denny Avdija. But I don't know, again, I've only heard that late, very late, like 1:30 in the morning last night, haven't really run that past anybody else. Doesn't really matter anymore. But you know, they went through the process, but as I said, the linkage around the league from the people that I talked to with the Bulls and Patrick Williams was pretty prevalent starting late last week and then really intensifying early this week, and that's where they ended up.
Killian Hayes, the French guard from Orlando, oddly enough.
There you go.
Great stuff, KC.
Thank you, KC.
All right, guys. Good talking to you. Take it easy.
Yep.
That's fantastic stuff. A lot of fun. He is. Yeah, it was weird. All right. We got to get to your calls. I'm very curious to hear what people think of Patrick Williams. Very curious to find out if there are a lot of Patrick Williams fans. 312-644-6767 is the number to the Score listener line. It's powered by BetQL, Bet Smarter, and Beat the Books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Again, 312-644-6767. Are you satisfied coming out of this draft, or are you a little bit hesitant about this? I love the background of this player. We'll get into it next. Mullion on the Score.
It was a great night. Happy with our selections at 4 and 44. We were ready to pick in June, and now we are in November. Staff did an unbelievable job collecting information, watching film, constant updates, you know, changes. We were able to adjust and adapt to schedules of chasing some of the prospects.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Arturis Karnisovas. We're going to be talking to him in just a little bit, but what a job to have to get done in the midst of a pandemic to try to go through a draft, to try to figure out who to take, especially in a year where there was no finish to the college season. Not an easy chore, David.
Interesting, too, Mully, that Patrick Williams was able to, you know, keep a secret, and the Bulls wanted to keep a tight lid on the information, and they had a pre-draft workout in L.A. and dinner, and that was apparently – you know, one of the things that they really found out more about him as a person, and, you know, the workout mattered, and nobody really knew that until he revealed it last night. So those kind of things and details are difficult to keep under wraps, especially, you know, with so much focus on this draft and so much time, really, that's elapsed. I mean, usually it's in June we're talking about the draft, and here we are in mid-November. So there's a lot to like about Patrick Williams, both on and off the court.
Yeah, I mean it's a really interesting story. I'm going to be curious to get a little more information on that workout. You know, is that, David, a 1-on-0 workout? Is that just a guy in a gym hitting shots? Is that I don't know how that works. And you know, you really can't. I don't know how much information that you can gain. I think you have to go back and do all of your kind of scouting. And clearly they went back even to high school to figure out who this kid is and what he could do, because there wasn't a ton of information based on his college career.
It's a great point. In the pandemic, you don't know what those circumstances and details would be. They could also ask Kobe White, who apparently, you know, has some history with Patrick Williams as well, both, you know, high school hot shots in North Carolina, where it's difficult to, you know, they take their basketball seriously in North Carolina. And they played against each other on the AAU circuit, I think, in high school as well. And Kobe White sent out a welcome to Patrick Williams, his new teammate, last night. And that's cool to see these kind of connections that you didn't know existed. And that may help his adjustment period. And it's going to happen fast. Here we are. We have a 19-year-old. You know, training camp starts in a couple weeks. The free agency is going to be here on Friday. So there are a lot of things going on in the NBA world, and you hope that this young man is mature enough to handle it and to adapt quickly. I don't know what their expectations are for him as a rookie. What's realistic?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've got Otto Porter Jr. in that position right now. He's the starter. I think that, you know, a lot of times guys come into the NBA, they've got huge reputations, they've got a lot of swagger to them, they're used to being the star of their team, And I think that this kid might be more prepared for actual NBA play than most players because of what happened to him in college. You know, here's a kid, he won a state title as a senior in high school in North Carolina, and then he's obviously a five-star recruit. He goes to a team at Florida State where they're a Sweet 16 team that had won 29 games and had six players coming back. So he ends up as the sixth man in an 11-man rotation, and he learns that it's not all about him, and no, you don't handle the ball. You're not creating your own shot. You have to go over to this spot or go over there. We need you to play defense. Whatever it is, he's willing to do, and I think that's what life is like in the NBA for young guys.
I think that's a great observation. And you know what I like about him a little bit is that here he was, an accomplished high school athlete in the state of North Carolina, and Duke, North Carolina, passed on him. So what did he do? He went to Florida State, probably with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And I think, you know, it was alluded to last night when they were describing him, and he goes to Florida State. And that's a program that does have to, I think Leonard Hamilton talked about, that, you know, they're in a conference full of blue bloods, and they're the new bloods, and that's the way they approach, you know, their schedule, and that's the way they build their program. And you like to see a guy who's coming to Chicago intent on working, and he knows what that means, and he knows what that's like. And I like the background. It's hard not to, because he comes from a family of, you know, his parents played college basketball, right? Small college basketball. You mentioned the older brother thing. I love that, because he understands what it's like to be sort of picked on and to have to work your way up. So I also think that there's just, it's a new regime here. And yeah, we don't know much about AK and Mark Eversley and all those things, but if they're asking you for a little bit of trust here, I think that they're entitled to that as a new regime who hasn't, you know, made a bad pick yet. They haven't made a good one either, but they're entitled to the benefit of the doubt until proven otherwise.
312-644-6767 is the number. Let's try Pat. Pat's in Cedar Lake.
Morning, Pat.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good. Good.
So listen, I don't know a whole lot about Patrick, but what I do know is I think we need to pump the brakes. We need to give Arturas his time. If you just look at what he's done so far, it reminds me a lot of being a Cubs fan when they got Theo, and, you know, you had a sense of, okay, things are different now. And honestly, that's how I feel with the Bulls. I know it's been a long time. It's been a rough stretch, but you just look at what he's done so far. Even hiring Billy Donovan, you know, Billy Donovan's a really good head coach, I think. And, Paul, you brought it up a little bit ago, how they've done a really good job of keeping everything close-knit. You know, not a lot of word out there. Like, I mean, I don't even think anyone in the public eye really knew that they were even looking at Billy Donovan. But when they hired him, I was like, man, that's a really good hire. And you look at what he did in Denver, you know, he helped build that team into a top four team in the Western Conference, which is a hell of a lot better conference than the Eastern Conference. So so I think we just need to take some time, let Arturas do what he's doing. And I really think that this, like you said, it's a new regime, and I think that he's doing a good job, and we just got to give him some time, and we got to trust him. So,
thanks, Pat. Really interesting, too, Mully, to hear Patrick Williams last night talking about the process, the pre-draft process. And obviously, they are his new bosses, so he's going to say complimentary things. But the one thing that he pointed out in dealing with the Bulls was the basketball intellect, the way that they talked about, you know, using him and the program and the roster and what they expected out of today's NBA, and how that stood out among other general managers or executives that he talked to or his agency talked to and they worked out. So that's a good sign when people are pointing out how smart your new boss is, rather than, you know, what we've been through the last couple of years, perhaps, and those examples, that's progress.
I'm just trying to get over the fact that Pat just called Patrick Williams Albert Amaro Jr. I'm just trying to work my way through it. let's get to Kevo. Let's get to Kevo. We'll get
rude.
Right back to the phone line.
Shouldn't do that.
312-644-6767.
My conversations with them were basically just basketball conversations. We went to dinner or whether it was on the phone, it was just basketball conversations about schemes, or I'm asking questions about things to look for on the court, or they're asking me what I look at on the court, things like that. They asked me, you know, the position that I feel comfortable playing. So most of the conversations were just basketball conversations. We talked about basketball, talked about schemes, and pretty much everything basketball-wise.
Mullion Hall, thank you, Kempo. 312-644-6767. That is the voice of Patrick Williams, the newest Chicago Bull player. And we're going to get to Phil. He's in Plainfield. Morning, Phil.
Morning, Phil.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. First of all, congratulations to the Williams family. Tremendous opportunity for the young man. But I got to tell you, I just sense a little Trubisky here. While you were at break, I was trying to find out.
What?
I see a little Trubisky. I see a person who didn't spend a lot of time on the field or in this situation on the court during his time in college. I can't believe that he was a sixth man on a non-15 top 15 type team, and he's the number four pick in the draft. I mean, we could talk about upside, but I think he has a tremendous down. He has more opportunity of a lower floor than he does a higher ceiling. And I was Talk to me.
Well, I don't know your basketball credentials, Phil, but I do know Arturis Karnišovas has got a pretty good track record with player development, and I understand why Chicago was scarred by the Trubisky experience, but I just don't think that they're comparable to in terms of drafts. The NBA criteria, the NFL criteria, how soon they're going to play, what the way they fit on rosters, I understand it, but I just don't think it's a valid comparison.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, what you're talking about with Mitch is a guy that didn't play in his college career. He had to sit and wait his turn and then finally got on the field, and then there was a trade up to get him. I get it. We're all traumatized by everything that's happened since Mitch arrived in
yes.
Chicago. But, I mean, this is an 18-year-old kid showing up at college and playing well enough on an established team. They were a Sweet 16 team. They did have a ton of guys coming back, including a player at the position that he played that was a year ahead of him, who got drafted number 12 by San Antonio, who supposedly were in love with this kid, and then settled on his teammate that started ahead of him. He was the sixth man of the year because he was the guy that came in and had a huge impact in games. It reminds me a little bit, David, and I don't know if you remember Marvin Williams from North Carolina.
Yeah.
That North Carolina won the title that year. They had, like, Scott May's kid, and they had a bunch of players. But he was the sixth man on that team, and he ended up having, like, not quite the great career that maybe people thought he was headed to, but he played 1 year in college, and he ended up being a top pick. I think he went second, and he ended up having, like, a 15-year career. So I don't know how you determine how good a guy is, but I think that it's going to be fun to talk to AK about this kid, because I think there's a reason they took him, and I think he fits what they want out of a player.
Starting is overrated. Finishing is what matters. Just because he's, you know, positionless doesn't mean that this regime is directionless. I don't know that you could really look at the Bulls' approach to the draft and factor in anything that involves the Bears' approach to the draft under Ryan Pace.
Yes. 'Cause
natural to do so, but you are right. We have been traumatized by the Trubisky experience. So maybe that's why, and I appreciate the phone call. And Phil, you're exactly valid. It's a valid concern and question, but I just think that it's not one a comparison that I would be willing to make.
You know, Ryan Pace couldn't have made the pick anyway. He would have traded the pick away before he would have gotten the shot at.
No,
it, so
he would have moved up. He would have given up draft picks to move up.
Ah,
he would have,
right.
Yeah. That's what he does. But anyway, let's not get caught up in that nonsense. We're going to bring in Jerry DiNardo next. We're going to talk about the trauma that's facing the Big Ten. And there's a couple programs that really aren't holding up their end of it. And, David, maybe you can have a Mac attack if you want. I know big game last night. You got to
chirp, chirp.
Fired up. Yeah, David's always fired up about his college football. And Jerry DiNardo can help us next. Mullion Hall on the score.
Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network college football analyst, NCAA. Mullion Hall. Hawes College Football Expert.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's always a delight to talk to Jerry DiNardo. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Hey, Jerry, good morning.
Morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
So, listen, we've got to get to the big games, the unbeaten teams that are squaring off, and we want to talk about that. But it's really hard to watch the Big Ten and look at performances from Penn State, look at performances from Michigan, and you can't help but think, like, wow, how the mighty have fallen. It's just shocking.
Yeah, Penn State's the bigger shocker to me. I think a lot of us thought they could possibly be in the college football playoff conversation. You know, it hasn't looked right. You know, the loss to Indiana set them back. You know, Kirk Schiracher, the offensive coordinator who left Minnesota to go to Penn State, I thought he'd have more of an impact on their offense. Although, if you look at the statistics, they're actually moving the ball. They're just having some trouble in the red zone. But the overriding factor for me with Penn State is when I watch them play, they don't look like they're playing with the intangibles that a James Franklin team usually play. Whether that's, you know, full speed on defense, whether that's enthusiasm, that kind of feel. And when you have a team like that and there's an issue that isn't technical, it's usually almost impossible to solve it the same year. You have to go to the next year. Mully, Michigan, you know, Michigan's always been a little bit of a mystery, you know, and so they continue to be a mystery. Their players aren't as good as they were a couple of years ago. Don Brown continues not to be able to stop. It used to be Don Brown's defense couldn't stop the best teams. Now they can't stop any teams because they've caught up to his man coverage scheme.
So, Jerry, Northwestern did it again. They 4-0, they beat Purdue. That defense comes through in a big way. But they also get unexpected production. Look, I mean, I watched Northwestern. Peyton Ramsey has been so clutch. But Ramadj Jokio Bowman, 3 touchdown passes he catches in the end zone. I did not expect somebody to emerge in the passing game like that. They're getting clutch performances for some key guys. What do you expect from them this weekend?
Well, I expect them to make Wisconsin throw the ball. I do not believe that Wisconsin can run to win. They're going to run to keep the defense honest. But Mike Hankwitz is going to be very gap sound. And I think Wisconsin's chances to throw the ball probably more than they usually do. They're 60-40 right now, run to pass. I see that them going turned around. I see them being 60% pass this week. They don't have a great tailback. And this Northwestern defense is fabulous, as you know, David. I do think Northwestern needs to be a little bit more vertical, you know, and I think that'll come. Otherwise, I think we're going to see the Wisconsin defense sit on a lot of their routes. But, you know, Mike Majakian and Peyton Ramsey certainly have made the difference for Northwestern. It's just going to be a typical Northwestern-Wisconsin game, other than the fact that I think that Wisconsin will throw it more than they'll run it.
Tom Allen led Indiana to, like, its 8 wins last year, the most in 25 years or something. I mean, just a crazy good season for Indiana. And here they are. They're 4-0, and they're moving up in the rankings. But now they head to Ohio State, and I checked Bet Rivers this morning. 20.5 is this point spread on that game. It's as if, I mean, to be favored by almost 3 touchdowns, it's almost like no one is going to give Indiana any chance. And you know, frankly, Jerry, I don't either. But it's pretty extraordinary what he's done with that program.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Ohio State has beaten 2 teams that have played, 3 teams that have played 11 games or 11 their opponents have played 11 games and only have 2 wins. So that even makes that spread more mysterious. You know, Molly, to me, this is a 10-year project. This started with Kevin Wilson, and then Tom came as Kevin's defensive coordinator. He straightened out the defense. Then he became the head coach and still managed the defense. And then he gave the defense to Kane Womack as defensive coordinator. So now he's this CEO, emotional type, of head coach. They've done a good job recruiting. I mean, this is one of the fabulous coaching jobs, you know, in the country over the last 3 or 4 years. I say this all the time, and I love Bill Mallory to death. He was a tremendous mentor to me. He won 69 games, and he was the most winningest coach in Indiana history. I believe Tom will break that record. I think he's the perfect guy for it. And when you get a perfect fit, which are hard to get, you want to do everything you can to support him and keep him. And I hope Indiana does that with Tom.
Oh, I love Bill Mallory. He's one of those great all-time guys.
No doubt. No doubt.
Oh, yeah. And Jerry, look, stick with the Tom Allen thing for a second, because I had a lump in my throat watching this. But when he was talking about and dealing with his son Thomas, the reserve linebacker, redshirt junior, who was injured, and it doesn't get much better than that. It just shows you how much is invested, that Tom Allen has invested emotionally and otherwise in this program and what it means to his family. It's just your heart goes out to Thomas Allen, but as well, and Tom is as well.
David, the best thing about that is genuine. You know, yeah. I mean, that is who he is, you know, and that's what we've come to appreciate. You know, he took over for Dick Callahan at Ben Davis when I was coaching at Indiana. And when Dahlhan retired, who was a famous Indiana coach, you know, I visited with Tom in his office. He was the head coach, and I was going to all the high schools in the state of Indiana. And that's when I first met him. And then when he came back to be defensive coordinator, and since then, you know, I do end zone to end zone. A lot of times I get a chance to visit with coaches privately before or after I do that piece. And during those times, I've really gotten to know him, and I mean, his emotion is real, and it's to be admired.
Jerry, just generally speaking, has the transfer portal changed college football to you? I mean, when you see teams able to add things that you didn't see coming, doesn't that sort of open up the game a little bit? I mean, I'm not suggesting that it changes the game completely, but it's certainly the balance of power shifts.
It changes the game significantly, Mike. It changes how you manage a roster if you are a have, right? If you're a have, then you have more depth than the have-not. That's one of the definitions of a have and a have-not. So it's given a have-not a chance to constantly tweak their roster. And so if I need a quarterback and I'm a have-not and a have has three of them, that third one might be better than anyone I have in my roster. And so it's going to change the game significantly. And we're getting ready to have transfer portal with no penalty. I mean, they'll from this point on, there'll be no penalty for transferring. Just the side note to this, because this is a pet peeve of mine. The adults started this. When the adults blame the kids for leaving, this started when coaches started making $7 and $8 million a year, and the players said, what about us? Why has it changed so much for you financially and not changed in any way for us? So this portal and this transferring without penalty has been looked at by administrators and people in government as a way to reward a group of young people that have made the adults millionaires.
Jerry, Michigan's worst start since 1967. Does Jim Harbaugh survive this?
I think if he wants to, he does. I honestly, David, don't think there's a lot of pressure for him to leave Michigan. I think everybody wants him to do better. Yes, he wants to do better. I don't see the Michigan culture such as the Ohio State, where it's national championship or bust, or some of the SEC schools. I just think that he'll be there as long as he wants to be there. And, you know, they'll win some games down the road here, and then before you know it, it'll be off season, and we'll be talking about next year. And, you know, I think, honestly, it would have to get, and this may sound funny, it would have to get a lot worse for Michigan not to want Jim Harbaugh. I mean, they all want to do better, but I kind of think he has a lifetime contract, unless things go worse than they're going right now. And I think you just blame this whole mess on the pandemic and you move on to 2021.
Great stuff, Jerry. As always, really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right, see you guys. Thanks.
That is Jerry DiNardo. That's fantastic stuff. We're going to talk to Arturis Karnisovas next. We're going to find out what the chief decision maker feels about the decision he made yesterday. And he's just getting started, right? We'll ask him. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.